Folk session number 13205, Reel 5.
Webster Reel 5.
Yes, I realised when I got on board and thought where you were really putting the boat in jeopardy. But Ben Bryant was a captain, not to everybody's taste. In fact, I always thought he was very aloof. Not the friendly type. But I wouldn't question his ability as a submarine captain. He was good. In fact, I was very fortunate with my submarines in the Med. I first had Ben Bryant, and when I left the Safari, I joined the Old Tour, and we had Nobby Hunt.
When did you join the Old Tour?
I joined the Old Tour the 6th of October 1943, and we carried out, of course, the Old Tour was a U-boat, not so much gun action as torpedo, and Nobby Hunt, the skipper, was an expert in torpedo warfare. My memory's growing a bit dim now about the various patrols.
Did you join the ship at Gibraltar?
No, I joined her at the Maidstone in Algiers. From Algiers, we proceeded through to Malta, doing a patrol en route, and on reaching Malta, we were informed that we would proceed to an island called Maddalena. It was in the area of Sardinia. The reason for this was that the German forces had been knocked out of the south of Italy, and Maddalena was very much on the doorstep as far as coastal raids by submarines went. It cut out a lot of the getting to and from the patrol areas. So the consequence was that we had longer on the patrol areas, but less time to get back to Maddalena. Maddalena had been used by the Germans, I think, as a submarine base and general service base. So we had a small barracks there, and life wasn't too bad. Although Maddalena was occupied by, there were a lot of Italian prisoners of war, and for the first time we really caught up with our American allies. We got on with the Yanks all right. I met individuals, and at times they were a big help, because despite what British servicemen used to say about the Yanks, and I was included in those that were saying things about the Yanks, they were well provided with this world's goods, and they weren't mean with it, because we used to get tinned chicken off them, tinned turkey, a thing that we hadn't seen. We carried out three patrols from Maddalena, And in the end of, or rather, yes, the end of January 44, we left for the UK. The Altor stint of patrols having been completed.
Did the Altor have much success on its patrols?
Yes, the Altor, whilst I was with the three patrols I was with her, we sank several merchant ships in the region of 6,000 to 8,000 tons. And prior to my joining her, she had quite an eventful career in the Mediterranean. I have a photograph of her Jolly Roger, and it was well filled up with stripes for gunfire, or stars for gunfire, and bars for naval men of war and merchant shipping, Italian. So she had a very successful commission, no doubt due to a very highly efficient submarine commander, a gentleman who was very popular with his crew. Very small man, with a beard, but he had heaps of energy there. Really good.
Did the return voyage to Britain take place without mishap?
Well, it was beautiful, really. We called in at Gib and went ashore, and we went into the we had a good night ashore. We went to the usual bars in Gibraltar with their bands, bags of trumpets, and plenty to drink. I brought some bananas back, which I they were green bunch, and I hung them under the forward hatch, where they kept cool until we reached the UK. The trip back was done on the surface, because 15th of March 44, the U-boat threat in the bay had been, I don't say virtually wiped out, but near enough to it by frigates and also the RAF. So we did a small zig all the way to England through the bay. The weather was beautiful. Now, I've been through the bay quite a few times, and lucky, I've never had a rough crossing. And yet other people would tell you that the bay is shocking. Well, on this occasion, it was magic. We could get up on deck, get the sun into ourselves, watch the old flying fish, and catch a few when they flipped on board. And everything went well. We were supposed to berth at Falmouth. And when a couple of days out of UK waters, coming towards the edge of the bay, the winter weather hit us. And you can imagine, we had, well, I wasn't too bad, I was a wireless operator, I could volunteer to go up on the bridge, but the lookouts had a pretty rough time with just their shorts and balaclava helmets on and Ursula jackets. Well, by the time we reached Falmouth, we were really fed up, everyone. Everything was smashed on board, because we'd hit the usual rocky English climate. As we approached Falmouth, we got the signal to say that owing to the port facilities being strained, We didn't know, but they were cramming Falmouth with invasion boats. We were directed to proceed around the coast to Fort Blockhouse in Portsmouth. That didn't go down well with me, because I was a Cornishman and I should love to have gone up to Truro and seen the old folk. But anyhow, you can't have everything in life. So there was another stage over we'd reached after a successful commission, England. And from that time onward, my wartime patrols finished, and we were near the invasion date. So all British submarines, I think I'm right in saying this, were more or less ordered to keep clear of the channel and western approaches. So that in the case of the escort vessels detecting a submarine, there wouldn't be any doubt as to the nationality, knowing too well that none of our boats were in that area.
Were you ashore during D-Day?
No, I was then on the HM submarine Volpine. She was a new U-boat built at Walker's Navy Yard, Newcastle, and we went up to join her there. We were there for quite a few months until she was completely fitted, and then we took her out of dockyard control into naval hands commission and reported to Dolphin. From there we set out. That would have been April 44 for the submarine base at in Scotland at Rothsay, where they had an old depot ship there, pre-war vintage, and from there another part of my submarine service commenced.
You were trying to think of HMS Cyclops as the name of the base.
Yes, that's correct. She was based at Rothsay. And many's the tale was told about the Cyclops. I think the most laughable was the fact that she'd been there so long that attempts to get her out of Rothsay Bay were foiled by the number of milk tins that was under the ship. But she served her purpose and catered for quite a few submarines.
What was the origin of all these milk tins?
Well, over the course of years, obviously, all Matlow's milk never came in cows, it came in tins, the evaporated type. And when finished, they were ditched down the old gas scuttle over the side and they came to rest on the bottom. So they reckon that she was on such a mounting of milk tins, they just couldn't tow her off. So she stayed. But eventually she was towed off, so that's another sailor's yarn. Now I'm trying to sort out submarines now. The bullpine I left in September 46.
Did you go on any patrols with her?
No patrols. She was fitted for Far Eastern waters. The ventilation system was for Far East, but it was decided by the powers that be that a submarine of her size really did not have the range to cope with the Far East, which was left to the T-boats and above.
You were talking about Gibraltar, and you were telling me earlier off the record about the lighting up of Gibraltar from Algeciras. Can you repeat that on the tape, please?
Yes. When we were in Gibraltar, the Maidstone was alongside the jetty, and what surprised us when we first came to Gibraltar, there was no blackouts. All the lights in the streets, the ships had their lights on. And the answer for this was that the Spaniards in the Algeciras area had a large searchlight or section of searchlights that used to flash over the rock quite often, in a matter of seconds, minutes. So really it was useless blacking out the rock, which was nice for the Matlows who got the old main street in Gibraltar, and they had various cafes, and everything was lit up, and plenty to drink, plenty to eat. Which made you forget the war a bit, although occasionally we did have air raids in Gibraltar whilst we were in port. The ITIs used to send a few planes over to have a crack at the rock. Mind you, it was heavily fortified, because apart from the permanent fortifications they had in the way of Akak, there were also all the ships in the harbour. So successful air raids on Gibraltar were an unknown thing, really. I never, all the time we were to-ing and fro-ing from Gibraltar, I can never remember a ship being hit by aircraft. But after we left, there were a lot of attacks by frogmen, Italian frogmen, and it was rumoured that there was a frogman's base actually inside the harbour. But I don't know the details of that. All I do know is that they have patrol boats at the entrances that at intervals drop £5 charges. That was to wipe out any Italian frogmen that attempted to sabotage or use explosive means under the ships. But I can't remember any of that while we were there. It did happen, though.
Another thing you told me off the record earlier on was about how you used to spend your free time ashore by storing up the rum issue. If you're going to repeat that.
Yes, I shan't go under a charge now for what I'm about to relate, but whilst we were patrolling from Malta, of course we still had our rum issue. Now, we may have been short of food, but I can never recollect being short of our rum issue or air fags. At sea, the average patrol ranged between 21 days and 28 days. Very seldom did it go over. Not in Mediterranean waters. I can't vouch for the length of patrols out in the Far Eastern waters. We used to save our daily issue of rum, have a sippers, but save the main bulk in a bottle. And at the end of a 21-day patrol, well, we had a bottle and sometimes a bottle and a half. When we reached Malta, first and foremost was ammunitioning ship and getting torpedoes in and food. The next thing on the next day was paint ship. That was vital. All our flotilla were painted a light blue, which vied with the Mediterranean waters. Whereas ships in Atlantic waters and home waters, they were always painted a dull green, which matched the colour of the sea. Well, on arrival in Malta, and after we'd carried out the vital duties, then the captain and officers took their eyes off the crew. They were given 24 hours, really, sometimes 48, to relax. The main object of that was to take any stress or attempt to take stress and strain of patrols out of the system. And during that time, we were allowed to do pretty well the things that under normal naval regulation we'd have been canned for. And amongst this was we used to use the catacombs. They were the shelters built where we used to sleep. And rum bottles were open, cards were played, roughhousing took place. We had one crew, the P-45. They were a crew of madmen. She had the record in air flotilla. She was depth charged for 36 hours continuously. And they came back and they were in a feral state, the boat and the crew. But they were mad. They would get drunk. And I've seen them and joined in. Drunk, throwing mess kettles at each other and things like that. That the average sane bloke would say, what a crowd of squawks. But you must realise that all these even drunken activities help to relieve the strain, because whether a bloke bragged I wasn't worried about that depth charging or I wasn't worried about that patrol, deep down every depth charge you had scarred you, bound you. And I've always said that the man that says that he wasn't afraid on a submarine, well, I wouldn't call him a liar, but I think there's something wrong about you, mate, because we all were at times. The only thing was that you carried on doing your job. If a bloke was afraid and didn't do his job, well, apart from the captain, that he had his fellow crew members that would have shook him up, no doubt about it.
One or two things we've missed out about Prince of Wales, if we can go back to her. You were telling me about the bombing of the Prince of Wales at Liverpool when you were standing by. in the autumn of 1940, I think.
That's right, yes. Well, during my stay in Liverpool, standing by the Prince of Wales, the port, especially on the Liverpool side, was subjected to heavy air raids. The Birkenhead side, the side that Camel Yard Yard was situated, escaped quite a bit, although we had the occasional raids. During one of these raids, bombs fell in the Camel Yard Yard. And as far as I know, it was before I joined her, but as far as I know, although not receiving a direct hit, the Prince of Wales suffered damage with a bomb that fell between the dockside and the ship. This caused problems during the whole of her commission. Mainly, I think, condenser troubles. And that was a damage that was continually worked on long after she was in commission.
You're also telling me that the people in Liverpool rather resented not getting enough publicity about how they suffered in the bombing.
Of course, we were billeted ashore in what they call lodge and comp. I think we were given £2 a week to pay our landlords, and we lived with the civilians for meals. Of course, during our stint on board the Prince, such as fire watching, etc., etc. As I mentioned before, Liverpool really was bombed. For night after night, the whole of the dockside, where the granaries were, and the docks for unloading ships, that was ablaze from end to end. And we used to tune into the wireless, and Liverpool people were annoyed, quite justifiably so, but I suppose in the interest of security, the powers that be were right. But if London was bombed, it was announced London was a bomb, the East End or wherever it was. When Liverpool was bombed, it was merely mentioned that enemy bombers were over a northwest town. And as I say, I think the Liverpudlians, after what they went through, and there were thousands killed, really took offence. But then we didn't know the reason of the high up, so that was it.
Two other things about Prince of Wales. One was the convoy to Pantelleria, and the other one was the Atlantic Charter.
When we'd had our repairs, now, do you know, I can't remember